Welcome to the Electrify News Podcast, brought to you by the creators of Electrify Expo, America's largest e-mobility festival coming to five major cities in 2022.
Hello. Welcome back to the... I got to do it every time. Welcome back
to the Electrify News Podcast. You have to do it
every time. It's the Electrify News Podcast. We're here to have some more entertaining conversation. Again, last time I was a goat. This time it was just more of just kind of a... but we're back.
So are we going to talk about today? I think it's worth noting that, you know, we're recording this on May 19th, 2022. And that date is significant in the world of electric vehicle history because May 19th, 2021 is when the Ford F-150 Lightning came out.
That was the unveiling of the, hey, the best-selling vehicle in America is going electric. And
oh yeah,
we're 365 days hence. Is that right? Hence?
Sure.
And where are we? They're shipping them.
Shipping them, which if you think about it, so I mean, where were we a year ago? We had the Tesla Cybertruck, we had the Badger from Nikola, we had the Bollinger B1, the Rivian R1T. None of these were ready for market, and they were all, you know, a year away, 2 years away, and a year later, there's only one that you can go out and buy.
Well, Rivian's delivering. I mean, like, let's be fair. They are.
True.
I've driven an R1T, and it is the real deal. You know, so let's be fair. But
that's fair. That's fair. I've seen them. Yeah.
I would say to the production scale of what Ford, you know, is doing, it's. I mean, frankly, what Ford is doing with the F-150 is akin to what GM decided to flex their muscles on back in 2017, which was to say, well, we can build EVs, and we did, and that's when they brought the Bolt out from concept to production, and then boom, they did it. That was American manufacturing of vehicles saying we know how to do this.
Yes.
But in where Ford has done it so much more comprehensively, in my opinion, is that they didn't just do it with a new vehicle platform just to say, hey, we made an EV. They took their best selling vehicle and said, we're making it as electric. That is a huge stamp of approval on where things are going with EVs, and they did their homework. I mean, everything from how the frunk works on that thing to the functionality of what it's going to do for people at the work site, the pro version being genuinely cost like approachable for average people. I mean, the platinum version's out of the park with most folks being over 100K, but they did a good job with understanding what their marketplace for that truck looks like. And I think that's a turning the page. And then to bring it to market in 365 days, there you go.
Yeah, I mean, they did a really great job with that. You know, and it's funny because they changed the messaging. And I don't want to say that they changed the messaging, right? Because Tesla has never come to market and said, we are the green choice. We're the environmental choice. We're the most efficient choice. They are those things, but they didn't come to market that way. Ford did very much the same thing. They didn't do this as an environmental play. They did this as a capability play. The electric motor can tow more. You can do more on the job site. It can act as a generator. It can support the grid. I mean, it was a real shift in the way that electric cars are marketed and looked at.
Yeah.
And honestly, the fact that they're there doing it, I think, you know, we're talking about all these other companies, Lordstown, Atlas, Workhorse, all of them, that there's still chatter, like you said, there's still chatter around them. But I think the idea that I could go out and buy one of these things at a Ford dealer and get it taken care of at, you know, 3,500 dealerships nationwide with a, you know, international parts supply chain versus like, hey, maybe these guys are going to make it. I kind of think that was a nail in the coffin of some of these startups that were building electric trucks.
Yeah, that's the thing. And that's the truth of it. It's like it's been talked about for years, is once these OEMs that have been building vehicles forever start to genuinely do this with like real money and real strategy behind it, it's going to change the conversation. I still think though that, again, Ford is to their messaging and how they positioned it, to your point, this wasn't some like greeny save the planet type approach, to which I've always said, it's like, look, if you want to reach the mass market, you need to not try the environmental angle from the outset. You're immediately painting yourself into a niche corner.
Yeah.
But the F-150 is mainstream America, and what it's going to prove for a lot of purposes is that Ford is genuinely taking the strategy of saying, we are a mobility company. Everything from how they're even doing their development in the future with, you know, with Model E as their EV wing of their company building out, and Blue Oval being what is their traditional, combustion ICE vehicle development. They're making very serious strides from a top-down perspective to say we're serious. That to me speaks volumes. And so to your point about what does this do for these other startups, I think that, is it a nail in the coffin, like the last nail? No, but the lid is certainly being placed onto the coffin.
It's a very, it's not nailed in, but it's a very heavy lid.
It's a very heavy lid, yeah. So we'll see, I think Rivian, I think, is still going to shine through because, frankly, if you put an R1T side by side with an F-150, the R1T is a more elegant product. I mean, the F-150 is a more rugged product.
And sure, I think you could say the same thing about the Honda Ridgeline versus a Ram 1500. The Honda Ridgeline is a more elegant product. It's more refined. It's a little more unibody, a little quieter, rides a little better. But, I feel like the market has spoken and that's not what the truck market wants.
I wouldn't compare. I mean, the Ridgeline is complete. I mean, the R1T to me, if you set it up side by side to an F-150 Lightning, and they're both quad cab, they both have shorter beds.
Sure.
But the refinement, I think, is more of you sit like driving the R1T. It's just like this feels more Tesla-esque. Mm-hmm. It really does. And whereas the F-150 Lightning, it has a large touchscreen, in the non-pro models, for example, but it's still a truck. I mean, right. Genuinely, if you look at the interior of that thing, it's just like, this is a workman's truck. The R1T from Rivian isn't. It's more of a lifestyle truck.
It's more of a lifestyle truck, yeah. So, we talk about these lifestyle things and motorcycles always comes up when we talk about lifestyle stuff, right?
Oh, yeah.
Because, I'm a motorcycle guy and I always try to find a way to bring it back to that. But
two wheels.
But, it's interesting because in the last year, we've seen the first electric motorcycle from Honda. We've seen the first electric motorcycle from Kawasaki. And, we've realized now that 50% of the electric vehicles that Harley is selling, and they're all aimed at kids. Even Indian now has an electric bike aimed at kids.
Yeah. Yeah. It's almost like, again, cradle to grave, baby. That's you get them when they're young.
Yeah. Yeah. What a great point. Like, I wonder if we're going to see the 10-year-olds that are riding that Indian now in 4 or 5 years, Indian's going to roll out with their big electric motorcycle.
Well, they have to be planning for the future. I mean, again, the motorcycle industry has had to do a lot of reinvention in the last, a few decades, especially if you think about the demographics that have made who they are. Things are shifting a bit, and they have to reimagine how to capture that imagination of people that will say, but man, I had one of these things when I was 10, and it was amazing, and it was fun, and it's part of who I am as, for my nostalgia. That's, I think, a smart play. Also, too, it's cost-effective from a production perspective, is they don't necessarily have to come out with a $50,000 high-end electric motorcycle, right?
Yeah, and then the battery packs, too. Like, you don't need 100 miles of range.
Right.
If it runs for an hour, that's more than enough for the kids.
Exactly, yeah. I think it really is, again, it's strategic economically and from a production perspective, but also from a brand positioning perspective and how to engage with, new types of buyers. I think it's pretty smart. So,
yeah. And it's cheap PR, isn't it? Because
yeah,
it's motorcycle news, it's environmental news, it's EV news.
It's, well, I mean, people still love, I mean, motorsport activities, right? And yes. It doesn't have to be a gas powered thing to be in motorsports. And so I think what this
just has to have a motor,
right? Electric motor or a gas motor, right? So I think that what this is going to prove out is that the companies that have done motorsports well and have been enthusiast based, if they start to make these pivots and these moves in a way that's strategic, again, these are not going to be hit a switch overnight. They're a pure electric company, right? That's just not how it's going to go. But as even with Ford is proving, if they have the courage to say we have the confidence in our brand and our technology to get people into our flagship products, mm-hmm. that speaks volumes. In the same way with these motorcycle companies, is to say, we know we can create a brand new type of buying demographic for years to come because we gave them something that was really fun, but a little different, and we know we can do it effectively. It's just, it's your point. It's free PR to a sense, but it's a good move. I was impressed to see that actually.
Yeah, I was too. And I think, we talked about this on an episode where Chris was speaking. you know, hi Chris, the producer.
Hi Chris. It's
like, he's like got, he's duct taped in a corner, like he's not speaking today.
You're not allowed to talk when Matt's on anymore.
He's mumbling like, rrr, rrr, rrr. It's like, that's fine, Chris. We know.
But you know, he made a good point that a lot of the kids growing up now, like especially my younger kids, they're never going to experience an internal combustion vehicle.
Oh.
Like for the most part, like, you know, their little mini bike is going to be electrified. Their first car is going to be pure electric, if not a PHEV. The car that they're going to buy for themselves when they finally start making money is going to be electric. It's not even going to be a question for them.
Well, yeah, it's going to be built into, it makes me kind of chuckle and think about it though, because I'm like, well, hey man, we can't forget about Power Wheels. I mean, technically there's a lot of electric vehicles out there that kids started with, you know, they got shoved into the combustion world. Yeah. I'm just saying.
What? Wow. I mean, what a complete, like my mind just exploded. Like, wow. Yes. The first car I drove was a Power Wheels electric car.
I'm just saying.
Oh man. I think it was Bigfoot. It was the blue Bigfoot.
Ooh, that's a good one too.
No. It was a good one. Yeah, go.
One of my neighbors, I mean, she had like, you know, the Barbie one with like the pink wheels and pink body. She had like the Corvette.
Yeah, that's the one I wanted.
Yeah, I was like, it's cool. I got a truck. I want the vet, man, you know? So no, but yeah. I think that it's funny that this type of conversation has actually existed for decades. It's just that there was no graduation into the next version of what someone could grow into for an electric vehicle, right?
Right. Well, there was the IMEV.
Yeah, exactly. It's like we didn't really have, and even then it was like, I went from my Power Wheels to a Mitsubishi. It's like, no, bro, you need to have like.
This one's still a Power Wheels.
Yeah, still a Power Wheels. But I think that what we're seeing is that because of how the people that are harnessing the technology, and frankly, this is what's so cool about Electrify Expo, and, you know, as an event, I mean, not just us talking about it as news, is that there are so many touch points along the way of how you can engage with electrified mobility, and these longstanding brands that are creating, they're planting the seed, and it's such a neat thing to see. So
yeah, it's all, you know, and you want to talk about a longstanding brand. I mean, everything you just talked about is could be a segue into what we're going to talk about next, right? You're talking about brands that understand motorsport, brands with an enthusiast appeal, brands that are looking at different ways to engage electrification.
Yeah.
Bentley has just announced a 1500 horsepower, 1.5 second 0-60 luxury cruiser. And like, if you want to talk about a brand that in the 80s and 90s and into the early 2000s really was just a trim package on a Rolls Royce, but but persisted solely because of the enthusiast market.
Oh yeah,
you got to talk about Bentley.
Well, and honestly, I'm like, why did they only go for 1500 horsepower and 1.5 0-60? I mean, they could have done something so much more impressive. Like I seriously read that headline, I was like, oh my god. Like that's going to, I mean, 1.5 0-60. I mean, again, Bentleys are also not small vehicles, right? I mean, this is.
No, yeah.
This is, I'm very excited to see how this ends up like coming to life, because.
There's no way that it's going to do that on DOT tires, right? Like, you put some slicks on it. You take it out to a prep track. You got Simple Green all over the tires.
Exactly.
Sure. 1.5, maybe.
Yeah.
But like. The one that you pull up next to at the, you know, at the stoplight in front of the Piggly Wiggly, that one's not going to do 0-60.
That one, 1.5. It's only going to be like 2.1. I mean, and then it's like,
yeah, you know. And then it's, well, I mean, at that point, you're just riding with the rest of the poors.
Right. It's like, why would I have done this? No, but I'm so excited to see that, again, enthusiast brands that people are, again, these are pinnacle products that people have looked at and said, if you drive that thing, that is special. And for them to say, well, it's not only going to be the brand that's special, but it's going to suck all the blood out of your face when you floor it.
Right.
And it's going to break dynos when you put the vehicle on it. I think that's where we got to see it come to market. Like you said, like, you know, where's the asterisk next to some of these claims, but it's not like it's going to be that far off either. It's not going to like disappoint. These are brands that put a lot into time of making sure that when they say they're going to do something, they get close or they hit it, and it's going to be
right. Yeah, and keep in mind, the people that are behind this thing are the guys behind the Bugatti and Mate Rimac. Like Mate Rimac himself is working on this car.
Well, when you get into the details of where some of these new ideas are coming from, it's some of this is startup related, and like with Rimac especially, and the role that brand and the brain trust behind what made that brand possible is now getting into these legacy brands.
Yeah,
it is the new chapter.
Yeah,
it's the turning of the page for some of these, and and I'm still the person to say I think there's a place for gas powered motorsports. In the future.
In the same way that there's a place for horse racing, even though none of us ride horses anymore.
I gotta say though, watching the Kentucky Derby this year, Rich Strike from the back. I mean, that's who's gonna be the automotive brand that shocks people that way, where it's like they were so quiet doing nothing, and all of a sudden they're gonna unveil this EV that's gonna like blow people's minds. I mean,
I got to tell you, if we're going to play the prediction game, and I already published this article. So like, it's on Truth About Cars. So like, you can go and read it. I think the brand that is the sleepiest, quietest brand that has the potential to like really wake itself up and blow everybody away is Infiniti. I think a new Q45 aimed right at the Tesla Model S and the Lucid, but it's a Q45. It's got semi-active suspension. It's a true sports sedan, the way the first Infinities were, and it weighs 1,000. And it does away with giant range. It doesn't have big range, but it charges very quickly. So you like have a 800-pound weight advantage over the Lucids and the EQS, and make that thing really hustle. And I think it would blow people away. However, comma, I don't actually think Nissan cares about Infiniti enough to put a dime into it.
I was about to say that. I said, everything I hear you saying, I'm like, oh, I don't disagree with that, except for the parent company has to have the will to make that move with that brand positioning and making a product like that. And I agree with you in the sense that there's an opening and an avenue for, the industry has known for a while that we have to get the charging right. And when you commented on saying it doesn't necessarily have to have massive range, if it charges fast, then this vehicle is the weekend warrior for the person who's like, I'm going to go out and just shred this thing and it's going to be fun, And that doesn't necessarily mean it needs to have 400 miles of range. You could have 275, but still charge at, level 7, get back on the road in 15 minute speed. And it's like, yep, that's perfect.
Yeah. I have to say, as soon as I mentioned charging, I was like, uh-oh, I don't want to agitate Matt. I know he's having a rough day with the charging.
Oh, well, there's a lot happening in the space that is still proving that, we've got a lot of different ideas coming to the table on how to move forward. And on the receiving end of that is the consumer and drivers. And there's still a need for better consistency, better simplification, better user experience focus. That I think is still going to shake out a lot of these brands, to be honest. We can see some great vehicles come to market, but if they don't have that part solved, then it's still going to be problematic.
That's true. But I think, some people are doing some things right. Like I really like what Electrify America is doing by putting solar panels up and kind of charging themselves after hours on that. I think it's interesting.
Well, I think, these are the hard part about charging. I mean, we don't need to go too far down this rabbit hole, but we're still in that place where getting it deployed, getting it installed, getting it up and running and functioning. There's a lot of red tape that goes along with that. I mean, it's going to still be something that will take some time to get to weed through some of the bureaucracy to more effectively and easily get stuff installed. And that's what, the NEVI program from the federal government is designed to create some, checks and balances against how that can be done state to state. So hopefully that helps. Because at the end of the day, the driver's on the receiving end of that. It has to work effectively. And I think, I'm still very happy to see that compared to 5 years ago, the conversations we're having now are, like people that have been in the industry for a long time are drooling with excitement over the fact that we were actually having these conversations combined with the cars that are coming to market. Yeah. So
I was having a conversation with actually a kid named Scooter, a kid, he's in his 30s, I think, but his, I know it's getting bad.
Little whippersnapper.
But this guy, Scooter Dahl from Electric, really cool guy. I met him at the ACT Expo, ACT Expo in California. And we got to talking about quote unquote the old days in the 90s when, well, but no, because think about it. U.S. Electric Car was converting Mosler's Consoliers into electric cars while I was working at Mosler in the 90s. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that became something else, which then sold IP to someone else, which then became Tesla with J.B. Straubel, who had a much better idea of using these laptop batteries. And then, you know, Elon bought into that and started. And it's just like, I have been in this 25 years, and to go from a theoretical conceptual conversation where, you know, guys like Jim Quick are sitting there talking about, well, we should have a big electric motor for high torque and then use a little engine as a generator, and literally sketching it out on a notepad, to the biggest, hottest selling car in the world right now is the F-150 Lightning, which is fully electric. Mm-hmm. In the course of my lifetime, I got to imagine it's like those people who were born in like 1895 who saw, are old enough to remember the first Wright brothers fly, and then also still alive when we land on the moon, right?
Yeah, saw Neil Armstrong walk on the moon. No, it's, I don't know if it's that level of amazing, but
it's not, it's that impressive. Level of amazing, but like, you know, if you like drag racing, it's pretty cool.
Oh, no, like, well, exactly. Well, the thing is a lot of people that have understood how, you know, for example, electric motors work and how the torque works and how that can be leveraged. This is not a, you know, an unknown thing. This has been around for decades. It was really, how do you leverage creating the right amount of energy into a battery that could make that actually not a one pass wonder, you know, like,
yes.
You know, and that's where we've finally gotten to for the technology inside the batteries. Cause the electric motor has been waiting to be leveraged for that for ages. Yeah. And that's where it's interesting, because even it makes you think about like where some of these product designs and product development have gone. Is that's why I think, you know, plug-in hybrids are still such a functionally useful product to most people. If you, especially if you have a home and you do most of your daily driving around town and in the city, you're going to use your electric, you know, motor and your battery for the bulk of your driving. But that gas motor takes over for your long trips. But understanding that use case has still become very difficult. And I think it's interesting how we're seeing certain brands just say, we're just going to go pure electric. We're not even going to like dabble in that space anymore. And I'll be curious to see how that ends up working out.
Because it is a confused message, right? Like, are we pro electric? Are we saying that EV doesn't work? And just about everyone I know who buys a plug-in hybrid, their next vehicle after that is a pure electric.
Oh, totally. It's the lily pad car, right? You're jumping. It, totally. That's what I say to people all the time. Yeah. It's like, oh, it's your lily pad car. You just go to the next lily pad to get across the pond. Yeah. And I think, you know, and that's what my family did. I mean, literally, we went from a gas powered, you know, pure just gas car to a hybrid to a plug-in hybrid. And when we did that switch and we realized, because we have a garage, it's like, man, 90% of our driving is always on electricity. That's the differing element between a homeowner and someone who might rent or street park. That's the use case difference, right?
Yeah, exactly.
But brands like, I mean, Volvo is a good example where they have pure electric options. They have, you know, the C40, they have the XC40. And again, those are both great EVs, but they have also, they've expanded on when they said, we're going to really, you know, make sure that our plug-in options are solid. They now have longer range versions for driving on electricity with their plug-in hybrids.
Right. And well, so, interesting you bring up Volvo, because for 2023, you cannot buy a Volvo that is not a hybrid or a pure electric.
Right.
It's phenomenal.
Well, they're living up to you know, the announcement they made a few years back saying we're not going to be developing any more, you know, pure just, you know, gasoline.
Yeah, they were the first ones in 2017 to say that.
It's tough because there's some people who've echoed something similar, but this is where, and there's other, you know, people in the EV space that were like, hey, let's be honest to consumers here, is saying things like, we're only going to build electrified platforms. That, you know, to me, electrified means I can drive on electricity. That's what it means to me.
Well, but that's true of their lineup.
It is true. Some others are mentioning the electrified language, but it's
the electrified Corvette, for example.
Well, yeah, we'll see what that pans out into being, you know. I mean, but that's where I think it's important to, you know, differentiate what we're talking about. Just simply saying the word electrified doesn't necessarily mean you're driving on electricity. It might just be that it's part of the powertrain that's kind of tucked away.
Exactly. Yeah. All right. Well, you know, regardless of whether we're talking about a plug-in hybrid, a lily pad car, or a pure EV, you're going to be able to drive all of those at the Electrify Expo events. We're coming up on Long Beach, California is going to be the kickoff for the 2022 season. Mm-mm-mm. That's going to be June 3rd, 4th, and 5th, where you can meet the delectable Joe Boros, but not Matt Teske, who is not going to make it.
I love how you keep rubbing it in. I do love me some Long Beach. You know, I do. But
I mean, who am I going to go get grilled cheese sandwiches with?
That actually is a very good question. Well, I did take you to Wahoo's though when we were there.
Oh, that was great. Wahoo's was good, man. That was the highlight for me. So I'll hit that again.
Free plug for Wahoo's. There you go, guys. There you go.
All right, guys. So once again, thanks for joining us on the show. Next week, we're going to talk a little bit about the new Energy, NIU Energy scooter that we've got to review.
Oh, yeah.
But not this week.
Thanks for listening to the Electrify News Podcast, brought to you by the Electrify Expo, coming to 5 major cities in 2022. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter for all the latest in e-mobility news and updates.